picture of the video.
It's all called to order to the meeting of the hearing board of the Monterey Bay Air Resources District for Friday, February 13th, 2026. And we'll start.
Chair Goose, Vice Chair Dodge, Committee Member Gerard,
present.
Committee Member Cook,
present.
And Committee Member Corpy,
present.
Actually, hearing board members, excuse me. You have the quorum.
Thank you. So the next item on our agenda is nomination and election of 2026 hearing board chair and vice chair. And we can open that up to nomination. Is there any discussion from members?
I'm happy to nominate Mr. Guth as chair and Mr. Dodge as vice chair for calendar year 2026.
I can second that
if there's no comment.
Okay.
I appreciate that, and I'm happy to do it for another year, and thank you for that. And so we will take a vote. Why don't we do a roll call?
Okay.
Excuse me, do you want to call for public comment?
I certainly could. I didn't do that in hearing, but if you feel that we should have public comment, I will call for it.
On this, yes.
Okay, very good. Any member of the public here that would like to speak on the item before us?
No one online.
And I'll ask no one.
No one's online.
Well, thank you, Council. Yeah, I'll ask for a roll call vote.
Okay. Chair Guth?
Yes.
Hearing Board Member Gerard?
Yes.
Director Cook?
Yes.
And first alternate Director Corpy?
Yes.
Approved.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is public comment for items not on the agenda. And again, items not on the agenda. Is there any member of the public here that would like to speak to an item?
Chair, I would just like to make one comment.
Yes.
Member Justin Chang, it was an alternate public member, and he resigned from the hearing board. Just wanted to put that on record.
I'm sorry, I did not hear that.
Mr. Chang resigned from his position in the hearing board. He was an alternate public member.
Boy, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you for letting us know.
No hands raised online. No one online for public comment.
Okay. Thank you. Next, we're going to accept and file summary of actions for the hearing board meeting of December 12th. I myself did have an opportunity to read and review those, but I'm open for any comment and or motion from anyone. Thank you. Why don't we do a roll call on that, please?
Okay. Chair Guth?
Yes.
Hearing Board Member Gerard?
Yes.
Director Cook?
Yes.
Director Corpy?
Yes.
Yes, approval.
Thank you. Our next item is approve the hearing board meeting schedule for 2026. And I'm going to scratch my head at that. I may not have looked at that. We do that last month as well.
Last month, we modified the 2025 schedule. We didn't address the 2026 schedule in December. Is that right, Ms. Wyman?
Yes, that's correct. So this is the calendar for this year for your review and approval.
I'll open that up for discussion and or motion.
I'll move to approve the meeting schedule for calendar year 2026.
Confirm. Second, is there a second?
Second.
Confirm with council, we don't need public comment on this.
Pretty much everything that you're going to vote on, technically under the Brown Act, you want to give the public a chance to weigh in. There may be a public who has opinions about these dates.
Sure. Okay, no, great. Preferably would have been done before the motion, but motion's been made, the second that's made, but I will now comment. Is there anyone here who would like to speak to this item?
No one online.
Thank you.
Chair Guth.
Yes.
Director Girard.
Yes.
Director Cook.
Yes.
Director Corpy.
Yes.
Approved unanimously.
Okay, now we are going to get to our public hearings of the day. Item 7A, Docket 26-001, Monterey Regional Waste Management District, doing business as Regen Monterey. Going to start by putting people under oath, including staff, respondents, and we deal with once and then recite the names and ask them. You swear to tell the whole truth, the truth. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Amy Climo.
I do.
Thank you. Bronwyn Nielsen.
I do.
Felipe Melchor.
Chair, I like to say Felipe is not in attendance today. It's myself, David Ramirez, and Katie O'Connor with Regen.
Okay, very good. David Ramirez.
I do.
Katie O'Connor.
I do.
Thank you. Okay, so we will begin with petitioner.
And Chair, if I can make a brief comment, yes, before we begin. I just wanted to, I think I said this in the last meeting, but wanted to restate it that in the interest of transparency, I work for Central Coast Community Energy. 3C and Regen have an existing power purchase agreement. I do not handle this. It's with a completely different division. It has no effect on my employment or financials. I review this with legal, and I feel like I can make an independent and fair judgment on this item. So.
Well, good afternoon, Chair Guth and members of the hearing board. My name is David Ramirez. I am the Director of Engineering and Compliance at Regen Monterey. We've been at this hearing board last, we were here at this hearing board last month to discuss an issue that we had with our engines, which produce electricity for our facility. Regen Monterey is a land, has a landfill which we extract landfill gas from. That gas has methane in it. That methane can be used to produce electricity, which we do. Any excess methane is sent to a flare that can destroy the methane per our permitting requirements. Last year, around July of 2025, we started to notice that we were having ground faulting issues on the electricity grid. That electricity grid was causing, or those instabilities were causing our engines to shut down. And when we spoke to you all last month, we explained that we were in conversation with PG&E to determine whether or not that ground faulting, which was causing us to not be able to generate power, was happening on the Regen side or on the PG&E side. As it turned out, after a lot of testing on the Regen side, we were able to determine that the ground faulting was happening on PG&E side. In December, we were able to correct that ground faulting issue and to start generating power at the very end of last year. What that means from a permitting standpoint is that the source testing, which we had planned for that calendar year, was not able to be accomplished. We had 6 months of time where we could not generate power and therefore could not run the engines for the required time period for those tests. And so we're here today to get the official variance for not source testing in 2025. The last time we were here, we just got the interim variance. This is the official variance for that. And also we've added on another element to the request, which is the source testing for engines for this year. With that element, we are requesting to be able to evaluate the engines to confirm that they are operational and ready to produce power. And so we're making that request under this submittal. And there are some source tests which have occurred, and I have Katie O'Connor here with me, our senior engineer, who's gonna go over some of the source tests that have been done at the end of last year and this year.
Thank you. Hello, Chair Guth, members of the hearing board.
As David mentioned, PG&E was able to resolve their issue on the power utility grid in December, which allowed us to regain operations of the engines at the end of the year. We were able to source test our one zone of our dual zone flare, which we had requested in the interim variance in December. On December 10th, we were able to source test that. We kind of flagged that at the interim hearing board. And then on January 27th, we were able to source test engines number 2 and number 4, which are two of our 4 engine generator sets. And final reports will be submitted to MBARD once they are completed. We are currently evaluating engines 1 and 3 to determine what will be necessary to bring them into operation, at which point we will source test them.
Thank you, Katie. We do want to extend an appreciation to the staff at MBARD. They've been very helpful in helping us navigate the issues and been very responsive to us. So I just want to thank the whole team at MBARD for their assistance working through this. With that, we're happy to take any questions or comments.
That I do have a question. I don't need to know if I need to get into it in depth yet because I want to hear staff's thoughts on it. But the question is with this idea of, I mean, it's February, it's very early in the year. You're asking for relief from testing 2 engines, which is new to us. Why is it that you're foreseeing that you wouldn't be able to do a test?
I'm happy to respond if you want to.
I'm going to ask you that first. I'm going to talk to staff about the implications of it afterwards, but that's my question.
Yeah, so the provisions in the request are such that we do need some time to be able to run the engines to evaluate both if they're mechanically sound to be able to run and if the emission standards are capable of being met. And in the request, we've said we would run for a certain amount of time. I think it was 1 week. Full time, we'd have 168 hours of runtime to do these evaluations and tests, after which we would be required to source test the engine. So that we think gives us enough time to evaluate the engines and determine if there's a capital investment that's needed to bring the engines into compliance or to be able to run them from a mechanical standpoint. And this request is to enable us to do those tests, those evaluations before we decide we're going to either recapitalize those engines, replace them, or invest in the requirements to get them operational. So there are provisions in there to make sure we source test if we do go over a certain amount of time to run it.
Well, thank you. I have a question in my mind also that you're running just 2 of your engines. Once the other running well, and your gas capture rate typically such that you could run 2 engines without bypassing the flare.
No, the gas production is far exceeds our capable. It's about half right now. So half the gas could go to engines if they were all running. The remaining half goes to the flare, whether all of them are running or not. So
your gas capture rate far exceeds the intake maximum of 4.
Of the 4 engines, correct.
Yeah. Quick question, Mr. Ramirez. There's a letter on agenda page 27 signed by you to the district. And the date on this letter is January 6, 2025. I believe it should be 2026.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a error.
Just for our records to be clear, I think somebody should interlineate that and initial it to indicate 2026.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, please.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to mention that the permits that the petitioner has with the Air District, as mentioned, require annual source testing. And in 2025, the 4 landfill gas fueled engines were not able to be tested. So that's a violation of their permit conditions and also a violation of the state landfill methane regulation, which requires operators conduct an annual source test. I want to mention that at the previous meeting, the hearing board had requested some kind of documentation from Pacific Gas and Electric Company about this ground faulting issue. And petitioner submitted an email to us dated December 12th about this issue. The email implied that there would be a detailed report provided to the petitioner, but that report was never provided. So we have provided the email as an attachment into our report. And then as mentioned on January 6th, 2026, the letter that is attached to our staff report was submitted by the petitioner as an addendum to their variance request. And that was to add the calendar year 2026. And as was previously mentioned, two of the four engines have already been tested this year, engines number 2 and number 4. And in this letter, petitioner stated they would limit the engine hours to 50 hours before scheduling a source test. However, after further conversation with staff, we determined that 168 hours would allow them additional time to ensure that these engines number 1 and 3 are fully operational before they schedule their source test. And so that is what is put into the draft order for your review today. So the petitioner is requesting a regular variance from the requirement to conduct annual source testing for calendar year 2025 for engines 1, 2, 3, and 4, and for annual testing of engines 1 and 3 in calendar year 2026. And the term of the variance will begin on the date of this hearing, and it would go until December 31st, 2026. And there are no excess emissions from failing to conduct a source test. And there were no excess emission fees for failing to do a source test. Staff do not expect that not conducting a source test would create a public nuisance. And since there's no excess emissions for failing to conduct a source test, there would be no exceedance of an ambient air quality standard. Therefore, staff supports the variance to allow the petitioner to not conduct source testing in calendar year 2025 and for engines number 1 and 3 in calendar year 2026. And with that, we'll take any questions you have.
Well, I'll start with the question. I ask this always when we have flares and we have turbines, and I always get the same answer usually, but I want to check. So in my view, running through the turbines is much more efficient, much more complete combustion and cleaner. But even if they were to turn off all of their, even though they have a permit that says, that they're going to run 4 turbines, if they don't, because they had to shut off because of, is separate from the test requirement of an annual test, not running the turbines or running it all through a flare, that's compliant with their permits, is it not?
Correct. When we issue the permits, we evaluate them in that way so that they could operate the flare 100% of the time. Those emissions are accounted for.
Thank you for that. And the other thing I wanted to double check is I was looking for the table and I saw it before, but just to confirm, when was the date of the successful 2 and 4 test?
January 27th, 2026.
So that qualifies as the 2026 test?
Correct.
And so we're giving them a back variance for 25. We gave them an interim, but we're giving them the request is for regular for 2025, which was missed.
Correct.
And do you consider something like the January being or viewed as capturing 2025 and maybe we should do it again later in 2026? Or what is your thoughts on that? And I'm not saying it's needed, but what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so the purpose of the variance is so that they didn't have to do a source test in 2025. So I think that year is basically off the table. They didn't do a source test, and that's what the variance is for. And then because they need some time to evaluate these two additional engines, that's why we included them for this calendar year in case something were to go sideways as they're trying to do these upgrades if they need to these engines before they can source test them.
But to follow up on that, so the Air Board approves the permit. They probably, on your recommendation, have mandated an annual test. So we're skipping it. We're skipping. So there's going to be 2 over 3 years, or 1 over 2 years, depending on how you look at it. What is your view of how important the annual tests are, and that they need to be done on average once a year, and how you're comfortable? I'm not saying you shouldn't be, but how you're comfortable letting a gap go over this 1 or 2 year period in this way.
We feel fairly comfortable. They've had these engines for many years, and we have, you know, historical source tests. And so I'm not concerned that doing a test in January 2026, and then you're probably implying maybe what if they don't do it until May of 2027? That would be a year and a half. I feel fairly confident based on the history.
Well-behaved, because if you remember in King City when they had the igniters problem in those those were new, and in the first year, they were all running out of spec quickly. So you're saying, in your view, that we have history with this equipment, and it hasn't shown any of those kinds of tendencies?
Correct.
Okay, quick comment on the email that Ms. Climo referenced, which was on agenda pages 34 and 35. I was the one that suggested that the condition of the variants include getting something like this. I just want to comment, it's not explicit, but I think it's implied that it's not.
I did notice that, and I didn't know whether that was careless or unthinking or purposeful.
I won't delve into the corporate mindset of PG&E, but in any event, I think it complies with the condition that requested be included. In the
I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. I two items. One is following on Director Gerard's comment. It is good to see that from the last hearing board meeting that PG&E issue was resolved and the follow-up was done. It's good to see that follow-up for the engines. I think that the part for me that I appreciate is in the conditions and reporting requirements that staff put together, having the requirement of it not to exceed 168 hours without scheduling a source test. I think that that shows that there is a condition added onto it that will require being met or source testing happening. So I appreciate that being added. And with that, for those, I think that answers all my questions.
No, it looks in order. I'm curious how the fault was resolved and if David Ramirez has a thing, what was it that happened with the fault with PG&E?
Sure, so we don't have specifics from PG&E on what equipment was malfunctioning, what the actual problem was. The conversations we had was, we've made a change, you shouldn't see it anymore. And that's the level of detail we got from PG&E, and we were grateful that they fixed the problem, but we are interested in knowing how or what happened. To get a little technical, energy, when you generate energy, it has to have the same rhythm. Your engines that you're producing power, it needs to have the same rhythm as the grid. So they need to be pushing and pulling at the same time. And we would see it get out of sync, and that would shut our engines off. And there's a whole host of things that can be causing that kind of synchronization to not be consistent, and we're very interested in knowing, but the problem is resolved, and we've been generating power since we got that message from PG&E.
Yeah, I would just ask them, simplicity, copper electrons flow in copper wires, it ain't that difficult. Have them make it clear and simple, and just, it's not a unreasonable request. Don't allow them to make it in complicated terms and try to obfuscate what happened. You know, maybe this insulator wasn't insulating properly, just on one leg. Who knows? Something simple probably happened.
Sure, and they can tell me the complicated way too. I'll take any kind of explanation that they give us. And we have been in contact with our customer rep. And the folks who do these technical changes, they have a huge grid that they're managing, and they're going from problem to problem. And we do try to have a good relationship with them, and so they can share these things. In this case, we haven't been able to get that answer straight.
Thank you.
In a minute, I do want to take a look at the findings, but it is a public hearing, so I'll ask if there's any member of the public that would like to speak on this issue.
No hands raised online.
Okay, I know that the proposed findings, which we may adopt, are in the draft order and are part of the record, but I think just real briefly work through the findings and just see anything. And just sometimes there's different versions of different drafts. I'm referring to agenda page 89. I'd like to get some of the findings for this draft order, I believe. Anybody have a different perspective? Ms. Climo, page 89, agenda page 89, are the...
Yes, correct, at the bottom of page 89, under findings of fact heading. Yes, correct.
Okay, so I think it's clear that we can make the first finding, which is that they're going to be in violation of a rule, regulation, or order because they're violating a condition of the permit to operate. Anybody wants to chime in, just do it any time. We get that the conditions beyond the reasonable control of the petitioner. I think we discussed last time we would be able to make this finding in light of this being a fault and a fault of PG&E on their side, that in they're doing their job right, that actually shouldn't be happening, and if it does, it should be quick resolved very quickly, and it wasn't. I have a question about that. So when we go to 1 and 3, are 1 and 3 needing lots of runtime to see if they're okay because they've been shut down because of this fault? Is that shut down or the time needed to return them up and clean them out related to the initial PG&E fault?
No, these things are happening simultaneously where there's a business decision that needs to be made. Those engines are old. They need to be maintained. They need to be rebuilt. And it really needs time to kind of daylight those items. They'll be ready to run, but they have their, because of their age, they need to be evaluated. And that's why we have the 168 hours in there to do the evaluation. So the fault didn't cause that. It's just the age of the engines themselves that require a business decision.
No, thank you for that. Clear. Yeah, so I just share the thought, which is, we're asked to make a finding that these things were beyond the reasonable control of certainly the ground fault. I don't have a problem, but these other engines getting old, usually this is where we ask questions that have they been kept on regular maintenance cycles. And I mean, in other words, are you running in the 32nd year on a turbine that you should have mothballed at 22 years? And I'm going to actually look to staff if you feel like everything's snuff at this facility.
Yeah, I think it's common for landfill operators to change out their engines. We don't dictate the timeline for that. It's based on their determination as the operators of the engines.
And that, is it fair in your experience to say that they don't know that things are going to go bad until they do? That's the nature of this equipment?
I would say no. Landfill gas is very complicated gas. It's complex, has lots of different constituents, and so that's why petitioner does maintenance. I think they included some information in their application for this variance about all of the maintenance they regularly do for these engines. So we have confidence that they understand how to do that and make sure they're operating correctly.
So that addresses the lack of foreseeability of this one, but I'm going to ask some comments.
No, I think that I would agree with that. So the problem, refresh my recollection, the problem first arose in what month?
In July.
So had the problem not started in July, you would have had enough time to run. The engines would have kept running and you would have been able to test, right? And what prevented you from doing the testing was the PG&E problem.
Correct.
In July. But now that it started, as I understand it, you need some time to run the engines in order to do the proper test. So I think those circumstances are beyond the reasonable control.
We'll accept that. Any thoughts on that finding? And I'll go on to the next one then, which is closing or taking would be without a corresponding benefit. Well, we can't shut down a landfill that's gas consumption devices, because then we're in big trouble. So I don't have a problem with that one, but are there any other thoughts?
I'm fine with that one.
And same thing, the petitioner for variance is given consideration to curtailing operations in the source in lieu of obtaining a variance. Once again, when you get into landfill gas capture, that's a different animal than somebody who's cooking asphalt. I don't believe there's anything one can do on this, and that you can consider it all you want, but the best environmental solution is to do the best you can until you get it resolved. That's only my thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And this is the part for engines 1 and 3 with the 168 hour limit. So I think it's a good point added.
So then the next one is during the period, the petitioner will reduce excess emissions to the maximum extent feasible. How are we having excess emissions here, and how would they address reducing them?
So as I mentioned in my report, there are no excess emissions. And so from not doing a source test, so we don't expect there to be excess emissions. But of course, keeping the engines maintained would possibly keep them in good working order.
We have a proposed finding that they will reduce excess emissions to the maximum extent feasible. Then there is one or two sentences of expansion on that. The petitioner can reduce emissions to the maximum extent feasible, which may be true, but would it be appropriate to add into this finding that excess emissions contemplated in this scenario?
If that's what the testimony is, I think we could add that and say, but if there are, the petitioner would reduce them.
I like highlighting for the record that they're not a order, that they're not just doing it just the way that right. You said it. So I'm actually going to take the liberty of writing an amendment right now, reading it out.
Excess emissions are not anticipated at this time, but if there are, petition.
That exact wording, which is on the record. Okay. We'll go to the next one. Petition will monitor or otherwise quantify emission levels from the source if requested to do so by the district. Are we satisfied that you have the authority to ask for that if needed so we can make that finding? That is on page 91, finding F.
Yes, so they're in addition to their permit conditions, I think we also have conditions on the variance order where they're required to report data to us.
Very good. And then the final one is the nuisance as defined is not expected to occur. I haven't heard any assertion or thought that there's any nuisance going on here. Does anybody have it? Okay, so those are the findings we would have to make this order, and I'll open up the final discussion and a possible motion.
I'm happy to move approval of the permanent variance with the modification. That's discussed and put on the record.
There a second?
Second.
Thank you. Could we have it?
Okay. Director Corby.
Yay.
Director Cook.
Aye.
Director Girard.
Yes.
Chair Guth.
Yes.
Approved unanimously.
Thank you.
Okay, so we will work ourselves now to the next item, 7B. Wrong one. Yeah. Sorry. I have two agendas in front of me. Okay, so 7B, docket 26-002. Salinas Valley Solid Waste Authority, interim variance project site 31400 Johnson Canyon Road, Gonzales, California. And for this hearing, I'm going to begin with people under oath, including possibly repeating. And I will take the oath once and then seek people's affirmation one at a time. You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, Amy.
I do.
Kamiguchi. I do.
Brian Kennedy.
I do.
Very good. So we will start with Brian presenting your case.
Thank you, Chair. Members of the hearing board, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Brian Kennedy. I'm the engineering and environmental compliance manager for the Salinas Valley Solid Waste Authority. I want to begin by acknowledging that our written petition is lengthy, and I appreciate your patience in reviewing it. The underlying situation that brings us here today, however, is fairly straightforward. Like most landfills, the Salinas Valley Solid Waste Authority operates a landfill gas collection and control system. We comply with the California Landfill Methane Regulations, conduct the required surface emissions monitoring, and we retain qualified consulting engineers to design our system and forecast future landfill gas generation and recovery needs. Despite these efforts, recent events have made it clear that our existing landfill gas control capacity is no longer sufficient. Specifically, we recently failed a joint MBARD and CARB inspection. We experienced a failed quarterly surface emissions monitoring event, and after installing a new series of landfill gas wells, determined that we have effectively maximized the capacity of our current gas collection and destruction system. And that system consists of two flares operated and owned by the authority and a power generation unit operated by a third party. In addition, our field monitoring has identified elevated liquid levels, elevated temperatures, and elevated carbon monoxide concentrations in several extraction wells. These indicators suggest an increased risk of an elevated temperature event if we are unable to promptly regain effective control of the gas field. In November, SVSWA initiated a plan to relocate an existing dormant flare from our closed Crazy Horse landfill to the active Johnson Canyon landfill. The flare had previously operated reliably for many years and would provide the additional capacity needed to restore control of the landfill gas system in the near term. It was during our engagement with MBARD staff to apply for the authority to construct that we learned that the relocated flare would be classified as a new source and therefore subject to current BAC requirements, including the installation of an ultra low NOx burner. Historically, SVSWA has recommissioned existing flares following extended periods of decommissioning, most recently about 18 months ago, without triggering the ultra-low NOx BAC requirement. So while we were aware that ultra-low NOx flares are commonly required in non-attainment air districts, we did not anticipate this requirement would apply in our district and for the recommissioning of an existing flare. As a result, we did not account for the substantial time, cost, and operation complexity associated with this requirement in our immediate response plan. Through further investigation, it became clear that procuring a new ultra-low NOx flare or retrofitting the existing flare would require a lengthy design and procurement process, significant capital investment, and increased ongoing operational costs. These expenditures would need to be incorporated into a future budget cycle and approved by our board of directors. This is not a simple task when you consider the impact that the rate increases will have on communities in our service area, many of which have limited economic resources. The key point we wish to emphasize is this: we need additional landfill gas control capacity online as soon as possible. Timely capacity expansion is critical to reducing service methane emissions, maintaining compliance with the landfill methane regulations, and properly managing liquid and temperatures to prevent a potential elevated temperature event. With the requested variance, the relocation of the Crazy Horse flare combined with completion of planned landfill gas well installations can be accomplished in a few months. This will allow us to promptly regain control of the gas field while we responsibly plan and pursue a long-term BAC compliance solution. Without the variance, the timeline to achieve additional gas control capacity would likely be measured in years rather than months. During that period, we would face continued risk of fugitive methane emissions, additional failed surface emission monitoring events, delays or abandonment of planned well installations, and an increased risk and an elevated temperature event. Outcomes we feel a strong responsibility to avoid in order to protect both the environment and our surrounding community. For these reasons, we respectfully request the hearing board's consideration of this variance as a practical interim measure that supports regulatory compliance, environmental protection, and public safety while we work towards a full back compliance. I'll take any questions.
I do have a question or two, but I'm also will have a question. I read the fact set. Glad I brought my reading glasses. Fascinating set of facts I haven't actually seen before this board before. Thanks. But give me some rope here. But like the, you've got modeling and anticipations from just 3 years ago of certain rates, and you've gone way above. Now, I feel clearly. But are you thinking of why your capacity got overrun so much? Did something happen? Is something happening? Did you get better at capture, but before you were not capture? How did we, in such a short time, get such what a recent overrun of capacity?
Yeah, that's we don't know. I mean, landfills are a science project, but they're also an art project. It's you know, we were caught very surprised. You know, when we put our new header in and or expanded our header size per our engineer's request in fall of 2024, we did notice increased flow. But we kind of felt, in the way it was modeled, was that flow would be static in a sense as we added more wells to the field. So it really caught us flat-footed when we put in the 11 or 12 wells last fall. You know, we expect 10 to 15 SCFM per well. We got 30 plus SCFM. And so when we realized that our blowers were operating at maximum capacity, the landfill gas generator was at maximum capacity, and we knew we didn't have capture because we were failing the SCM events. We had surface emissions that were exceeding the allowable limits, and we weren't able to bring, at individual wellheads, we weren't able to bring gas levels down. That's how you know you have capture. So they were increasing, even when the wellheads were fully open. So yeah, we relied on that model, and we've over the years you rely on it. We do them every 7 or 8 years. So I don't really have an answer to that.
Yeah. Okay. So then another question: this flare that you're going to have a process to get this low. And they rented the flare, and they had it brought in on each flatbed. Is a low knock flare so that the bell will work?
So I'm not familiar with that. It sounds like it might have been a camel stick. If they're on a flatbed,
do you want me to comment now? Because
I'll just stop there.
Okay.
And it could be that I'm mistaking the hardware.
Well, low NOx. Well, to the question, the low NOx burner. So, on our ground floors now, you actually have a flame, right? You have a burner. You flame. You ignite it. It burns. It has a residence time, and it destroys a lot of the constituents of the gas. A low NOx burner is kind of like more like a catalytic converter. It doesn't have an open flame, and you introduce vast amounts of air into this burner. I've personally never seen one. The nearest one I knew of until recently was Avenue 59 landfill in Merced. So I don't think there's any even in the Bay Area that I'm aware of. So I understand there's one coming in our district shortly, but that was the first I'd heard of it. So the manufacturer of our existing, that's 72 million BTU flare, can make a retrofit. There's a retrofit, and then there's procurement of a new unit. So we can retrofit the 72 million BTU flare, the Crazy Horse flare, after we relocate it. But we still have to go through the process of paying for it and get the engineering and installing it.
So would you say now, in your view, that gas is coming out faster than you have any way to collect it?
Yeah, we're concerned that we have a situation where we don't have control of our gas flow, and nothing good's going to happen out of that. I mean, we all know in the news there's some
ATE events in landfills, Southern California specifically, they got out of control and people waited too long, in my estimation. We don't want to wait too long. We don't want to be in the news. We don't. We want to get control of this immediately.
I did have a question about, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen? I think you kind of touched on it there. So if you can't burn it, can't collect it, it's either going to be released or it's going to be in the ground, in the landfill, and bad things can happen right. when that's not under control. 1,000-year fires that can never be put out.
We're talking about it. Environmental impacts about water.
And I did have a question about the assumption that was made about retrofitting the two other ones. Were they at the same location? Were they put back into service at the same location where they were retired?
So this is the third one we put back into service. The first one we put back into service was for our Lewis Road landfill. It was actually removed and located to another location where it opossums lived in for 15 years, and we brought it back, rehabilitated it, and put it back at Lewis Road because the gas curve went up and went back down. So that flare, to answer the question, that was reintroduced at the same location. It had left, but it was never installed at another location. The second one we put back into service was at Crazy Horse. We had when the gas system was first developed, we had a 30 million BTU stack. That was deemed too small as the gas curve increased. We brought in the 72 million BTU flare, abandoned the smaller flare for 18 years, and then put a new blanket in the smaller one and reintroduced that and re-permitted it. So the answer to the question is they were not moved. They were not relocated.
Thank you.
Quick question on timeline. So it looks like based on the reports that you're anticipating the initial relocation of flare by April of this year. And then if you go with ultra low NOx flare, that would be another 2 years out. Is that the?
Well, so to the first point, yes. So we have we're building the foundation now. We have the flare, we have the blowers. We're having a demister built right now. Yes, we can make that timeline. That I can commit to. As far as the retrofit, our board's got to approve that. So I can't speak for them it's a lot of money for our district, about $900,000, $1 million. You know, it's going to require rate increases. And depending on our board at any given time, there's a reluctance for that. There's a lot of public scrutiny surrounding that. So we've got to get them on board to agree, you know, to commit to this. And then we have the procurement installation. And then, a year and a half, 2 years. I don't know. I can't commit to our boards approving that, but I anticipate they will. You know, we share board members on our board and this board as well.
Yeah, and I saw that in the report that it's board dependent. So, but what you are saying is that by April 2026, that's something you can commit to
yes.
for relocating. Okay.
Sure. I'll just first start off addressing I think you were referring to the City of Santa Cruz landfill.
I know they had a above ground flare.
Yes, so that was a little bit different in that they were asking to temporarily operate an open flare. In this case, this 72 million BTU per hour flare is an enclosed ground flare, which is actually what we want. So I just wanted to clarify why it cannot be permitted. It has a little bit to do with a complication of how we review sources under our Rule 207. And so the reason why this turned out to be different is that when we review a permit application, we look at the sum of the emissions of all of the things that are already permitted at that facility. And our Rule 207 has thresholds in Section 4, and it says if you're over these, and in this case for NOx, if you're over 150 pounds per day of NOx, then you're required to install best available control technology on any other new thing that you're trying to bring to your source. And so at Crazy Horse, there weren't very many permits, and so this issue didn't come up at that time. Now that they're moving it to the Johnson Canyon landfill, which has a Title V permit, has a lot of other equipment permitted there already, they have already gone over their 150 pounds per day of NOx, which is specified in Rule 207. So once you go over for one pollutant, then you need to meet best available control technology, which we call BACT, for any other pollutants that have a BACT limit for that piece of equipment. And so an enclosed ground flare has BACT limits for NOx, CO, and VOC. And so the way that this flare was previously permitted at Crazy Horse, it did not meet those limits. And so we had to deny the permit application because that flare could not meet those limits. And so that is why we're here today, is to allow them to operate this flare in violation of Rule 207 until they can retrofit the flare to meet our BACT requirements.
Retrofit their existing flare or retrofit this one they're putting?
This 72 million BTU per hour flare that they're moving to Johnson Canyon landfill. Yes, they will have to tell us. We already denied the application, and so then they're going to have to say, okay, we're going to retrofit it, and then we will evaluate it again.
Okay, so I understand now why you denied the application. Smaller facility had the exact same problem. Do it without it. Now, there's some things I don't know about gas capture, but they've got a certain amount of gas coming out, and they need it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but we'd rather have it burned even in an appropriate burner.
Correct.
But on top of that, and then this, and it might be in part to you, it's you've got gas in there. You have to provide negative pressure to get enough out. Even though you can get surface seep anyway, your facility, in order to be safe, need to have continual negative pressure. Okay. So you got it. There's no option of leaving anything in there in the interim. It's all got to be sucked out, or you get it. Get it.
Right. Plus surface emissions, because we're
it's potentially catastrophic.
Yes, because I think petitioner mentioned the subsurface heat.
And I heard it.
Yeah, so there's other things maybe that aren't even related to air quality, water quality, or just general fire safety that can happen if they're not pulling gas. No.
That was another thing I'm going to point out, is that public serving facility.
Yes.
This is not some guide.
No.
This is a public. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of your
time. It's okay. I'll just finish. I'll just go through, because I actually have a thing about that too. So I just wanted to point out that the petitioner does have two existing flares, and my understanding is they're hooked up to a blower that will be separate from this flare. And so we included a condition that would allow this flare to operate at the full flow rate of those two smaller flares, just in the event that during this variance term, something happened to that blower or to those other two flares, they could go full board on this larger flare. The current other two flares are smaller. One is, I think it's 30 million BTU, and the other one is 18. So this one at 72 is larger than both of those. So that was a condition we added into the order. And so the petitioner is requesting an interim and regular variance from the back requirements of our Rule 207 so that they can begin immediate operation of the 72 million BTU per hour flare. And so this interim variance will begin today, and it will extend until the regular variance hearing, which right now we're planning for March 13th, but it can be no longer than 90 days. In the staff report, we did calculate excess emissions, and that was based on using a source test of that 70 million BTU hour flare when it was operating at Crazy Horse. And we estimated the excess emissions to be 18.95 pounds per day of NOx and 18.95 pounds per day of CO. But I wanted to point out that was a conservative estimate based on that flow rate that I mentioned, that was the flow rate of the two existing flares, what they're permitted to be. And so we feel that's a conservative estimate. And so our recommendation is, because the petitioner is a public agency, that we recommend for the excess emissions fee calculation that we wait until we receive what the actual flow rates are this year for that flare, so that we can determine what those actual excess emission fee would be. And we don't expect a nuisance to occur from operation of the flare above the BACT limits. This flare previously operated, as mentioned, at Crazy Horse Landfill, and there were no nuisance violations at that site. And again, we don't expect that there would be any exceedances of any ambient air quality standards. This flare had been previously source tested at Crazy Horse, and so we don't expect any exceedances of ambient air quality standards, and so therefore staff supports the variance to allow the petitioner to install and operate this flare. Yes.
Yeah, I was going to ask kind of a similar question, but the applicant even if that they had realized that because of the back requirement they needed a new flare to begin with, we'd still be here because of the length of time, as I understand it, the length of time to acquire a flare that is back compliant. Just one clarification question. Is the reason it was considered a new source because they're exceeding the 150 NOx level, or was it the relocation from Johnson Canyon, or from Crazy Horse to Johnson Canyon?
Yeah, it's because this flare has never operated at Johnson Canyon. It's a new source at Johnson Canyon Landfill. Okay.
Thank you for the summary. So question would be, for this request here, this is an interim variance, and then it would be brought back in March as a regular variance?
Correct.
Is there any, and just what I'm trying to figure out is, if in April the flare is going to be installed, would it make sense to, I mean, do this interim variance now, but maybe have the regular variance in April or May, still within the 90 day, so that we can actually confirm the flare installed, see how it's operating? Or would that just be conditions of the regular and wait and see? I guess from my standpoint, I like to, like, you know, not everything can be controlled, but from a regulatory standpoint, see the progress being made, reevaluate and assess along the way.
I think petitioner may know in March even better than they do today the status of being able to start operating in April, and I don't know if there's any chance you could start operating before that, so you might want to have it in March.
I don't know what I don't know. We have materials that are being manufactured and delivered. We have the main components, so April I think is a pretty solid estimate on our part, but I don't understand. I don't know what happens if the 90 days elapses. If something, I don't know what happens.
I think the other thing is whether we would have a quorum of board members to hear something in April.
Okay. Yeah, I guess my only then question would be, and I guess in March it would be good to, if we do have it in March, it would be good to get an update on the progress that's been made. And then, depending on, I didn't look at the 2026 May schedule, but in theory, if we schedule for May, it may even be able to make, I mean, April, it may even be able to make May if we don't have a quorum in April. Just something to consider.
going to remind myself that this is a public hearing, so I will ask if there's any member of the public speak on this item. Not in the room.
No hands raised online.
Okay.
Chair, just a quick comment.
Yes, please. On
go forward with the hearing, and depending on what's reported.
Yeah, that would, especially if we can get a report on progress and if we see a lot of progress being made and feel like we can make assumptions. Yep.
So normally this would be what I would find for the interim variant. I think we've talked on so we only show good cause. To me at least, something has to be done. Public safety demands it.
To approve.
Second.
Okay. Director Girard.
Yes.
Director Cook.
Yes.
Director Corpy.
Yes.
Chair Guth. Approved unanimously.
Okay, that was the last item. I want to thank everybody and thank you for the support. Thank everybody. See you all. And all prayers be just